Good evening. James McCanny here with My Science Hour, December 3rd, 2015. This is the first of a three-part series. The next couple weeks, including this week, free living is the topic. And so it'll be parts 1, 2, and 3. This week, I will be concentrating on balance, freedom, eco-villages, and kind of your first step into understanding this concept. Next week, I'll be talking about specifics, things, the do's and don'ts, and all kinds of specifics about free living. So first, understanding the concept, understanding just a lot of things to do, you know, as far as procuring land. Maybe you already have some land someplace. But then week three will be modern technology and education in a primitive, eco-friendly world. Three-part series. But first of all, a couple quick announcements. The Hilton hotels have been hacked. This was actually about a year ago. And so it's just coming out. They're saying that anybody who has used Hilton services or booked hotels through the Hiltons, they say that the people didn't get your address, although they got all the information on your credit card. Well, I don't know how they didn't get your address if they compromised everything on your credit card. But anyway, malware somehow compromised the Hilton Hotel security system. And once again, they are selling useless firewalls of encrypted sales software, etc. This stuff they're selling today doesn't work. And the reason they want to keep selling it is because the companies that sell this garbage don't want to change their methods, because they'd have to retool, they'd have to gear up again. Plus, the NSA would have to find new techniques to get into your computer. That leads me up to a topic. I'm developing the crowdfunding for Windroid's 11 OS, which is an operating system to replace Windows and to replace Android for your smartphone, for your tablet, etc. But this is very necessary. I'm a person that knows quite a bit about this, more than quite a bit. And what's being pawned off on the public today is just a total sham. You have just... everybody is in your phone besides you. At any rate, I'm not going to talk a lot more about that, but in Paris, they are going to be in around France and the borders of France, Belgium, Germany, other borders with France, are going to be stopping trains now to check passengers. And, of course, this is all more silliness over the ISIS issue, which was a planned Israeli Mossad CIA operation. So they're going once again trying to crack down. And interestingly enough, Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, is getting bounced back. She's like did a big recoup of power in Germany since the ISIS shooting in France. Now that's really interesting because she was on her way out. And she's gained, she rode this wave, and this was, I would say, partly just to get Merkel back into position there in Germany. But this leads into the next topic. An international study shows that the USA is the most dangerous place to travel in the world, second by Europe. This is very interesting. That of all of the places where there's wars, everything else, you know, terrorism, counterterrorism, everything going on the planet, the United States ranks the most dangerous place in the world to travel. So if you're worried about going to dangerous foreign countries, you're way better off going there than going to your own home country. This is an interesting story. The MSC Divina, mega ocean liner capable of carrying 3,500 passengers, was hit by a rogue wave this past week. Now, what's a rogue wave? A rogue wave is a huge, huge ocean wave, just one wave that comes in. People don't really know where these things come from or how they are formed. And this is also why one has to be very careful at the beach, if you got kids especially, or if you're just at the beach on the ocean, if you're in an ocean site, the Atlantic, Pacific, or whatever. Beautiful day, the waves are coming in, everybody's having a good time splashing in the waves or doing a little surfing, whatever. And all of a sudden, whoosh, in comes this giant wave. I mean, it can carry people away, it can go up, it can, wash everything away. So anyway, something to be careful of. Most people don't know about these. Sailors who are experienced on the ocean know about these and always, always wear their life harness. It's a harness you wear around you, just like a parachute type of harness. And then you've got a cable which hooks on to lines that go around the boat. You never are in the open water without that on. I don't care how cavalier you are about open water sailing, but these rogue waves come up, and I mean, and unless you are strapped onto that boat, you're probably not going to make it back to the boat. But anyway, the MSC Divina got hit by one of these. A number of passengers injured when doors slammed and other things happened. But now imagine a ocean-going megaliner carrying 3,500 people. This is a big boat. Gets tossed around like a cork in rough water. And I have an expression that I developed when I was myself doing a bit of sailing out in the ocean, etc., and had some serious mishaps, by the way, a couple times. And so I developed this expression: there's no such thing as a big boat on the ocean. And so at any rate, that's just the way it is. And also, you're going to translate that into science a little bit and say there's no such thing as a scientist that's too big for his britches in the world of science, because a big wave like my plasma discharge comet model could come along and upset the entire scientific structure. So don't get too haughty out there if you're a scientist. A rogue wave could come and upset your apple cart. Just a quick note on internet searches. Now, we all do this. We go to Google. I mean, I use Google sometimes. I hate to say I do, but sometimes I do. I'll tell people, just Google it, that type of thing. I typically use other more secure search engines, etc. But nonetheless, search engines are search engines, and they're victim to the same financial requirements. They have to make money. So searches on the internet have become increasingly useless. Because also, here are some of the factors: ads and targeting. In other words, they know that it's you that's putting in that search request. Even if you're a different computer, you can go to the library. You think, incognito. I'm here at the library. Nobody knows who I am. I can do an internet search, etc. Within about 2 minutes, they know who you are. Yeah, they've got this down to more than a science. And then if you do a search on something, they return the search based on you, your likes, things you've purchased in the past on the internet, etc. So anyway, I mean, here I do internet marketing of my products and stuff, but I'm telling you, my page, by the way, does not rank very high, which is, I like. I'm not going to go out and hire somebody to make it spiffy and all kinds of tricks to make my page more visible. But at any rate, then there's another thing going on the internet. It's the CIA. They own Amazon. They purchased the identification and the database analysis system from Amazon. CIA did. That's because when somebody comes into Amazon or comes into a search engine like Google, The CIA owns almost all of the internet, all of the social media, etc. But you come in to the internet and do, say, a search, or you go out on Facebook, or you know, whatever it is, and they track you. This is all monitored, so they know you. They know you probably better than you know you, and what your likes, etc. So this is all going on. You get what the analysis system like Google or whatever thinks that you want. Pages also do games to get a high rating, like I was just mentioning. So you might ask for, I want to buy sandals. I want to buy a pair of sandals to go to the beach. So you type in retail sandals. Okay. Up pops an ad for something totally unrelated, but it says Target or Walmart or something like that. Or some place that doesn't even sell sandals, and what they're doing is they're paying for anybody to get to their site. And so you're targeted in this, or the search result really doesn't answer your question. You're in, you know, some city, some town. You want to buy sandals to go to the beach. That's all you want to know. You don't care about, you know, the Thanksgiving sale at Walmart. But that's what you get on your search. But last but not least is political correctness. So you might be looking for information on global warming, global climate change. Well, you're going to be directed to all those politically correct government-sanctioned sites that are on the internet first, because not only do they pay, but they own. Their CIA control mechanism is out there. And then, of course, with me, there are companies like Verizon that block you from even getting to my site, and this is still going on. I'm still hearing this from people. People write in, I can't get to your web page to listen to your show. I say right back, and who's your provider? Verizon or AT&T? Oh, that explains it. So anyway, the internet is a very owned, controlled place today. So use it with a grain of salt. And so anyway, the next topic, just quickly. There was a rash of ads saying that the Earth's magnetic field would change, we're all going to die, it's going to rip the atmosphere off, everything else in the world. So last Sunday, a guy named James Jancic, I'm on his show quite a bit, he's out of Chicago area, has a weekly radio show on Sunday evenings, called me up and he said, Jim, come on and let's discuss this. So he sent me some internet video links, and of course they were on YouTube, the total disinformation site. Please don't get your science from YouTube. But anyway, all of these scare the world is going to die, the magnetic field is reversing, it's going to go to zero, and we're all going to die, and you know, all kinds of terribly bad science. So anyway, you might want to listen to that interview. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this show. But then as soon as we did that show, the scientific community comes out and totally retracts it and says, oh, the Earth's magnetic field is not going to reverse. And so here's the problem. The poor public out there is getting such contradictory and ridiculous information. In fact, the reasoning for saying it's not going to reverse was much worse than the paper saying it was going to reverse. They were both wrong in what they were saying, you know. But anyway, the public is just being smashed with terrible, terrible science from both sides. At any rate, and then one last thing, Scamazon. I hope you boycott Amazon. Amazon has been rated the most divisive and selling, basically plagiarized material, copied material, material that's, say, printed in China or something else, completely lifted from the author and selling it. They don't have any controls. It's a horrible mess. And it's totally out of control, and Amazon doesn't know how to control it. So I call it Scamazon. China has banned certain versions of Windows. This is funny. China spies on their people. In fact, they've developed a new social categorization system for their public on which they determine if somebody is a good citizen or not, and this can affect your ability to get a good job, a better job, to advance in the party structure, or whatever. But, so anyway, China is spying on their own people and doing all kinds of categorization, etc. But they don't want anybody else spying on them. So in other words, that's why they've banned certain versions of Windows, which is very interesting. Leads me back once again to my project to develop the Windroids 11 OS operating system to replace Windows. And then goodbye, goodbye, Windows. You never, ever have to deal with Bill Gates or Windows or Microsoft ever, ever again. Wouldn't that be slick? You can go to my webpage. You can donate some money. By the way, the Windroids 11 OS fundraising is not doing what I'd call exactly real well. And you'll see that when you go there. But what you don't see is what's going on in the background. It's gotten a lot of attention, not in the fundraiser itself. It's on Indiegogo. But what it has done is attracted some attention in the background. So anyway, I'll talk about that a bit later. Here's something, disinformation. In the world of chemtrails, geoengineering, or whatever you want to call it today, here is the new twist that's coming out. And this, expect very soon, it's already hitting the streets, but they're going to, a good disinformation campaign by the government or the disinformation crew, whatever, that work for the World Bank, literally. I say the government, but they're a subsidiary of the World Bank. A good disinformation campaign is one in which they control both sides of the dialectic. Both sides are wrong, total garbage, but the one side they can paint to make look better. And this also happens in politics. But they're moving to a point, and this is why certain groups are moving into this methane issue, that all of a sudden we're being bombarded with methane because of the melting glaciers and permafrost up in Siberia, etc., and that we're all going to die. And methane is much worse than carbon dioxide. They claim, that's not my statement, that's the claim of the global climate change people. Now, right as we're talking, Paris is hosting the International Climate Conference sponsored by the United Nations. And this is nothing more than a big dog and pony show. 190 nations are there. Obama's there. Putin's there. Xi Jinping of China is there. So these are all like the G20, etc. All the banker puppets are there. And make no mistake about it. This entire issue of global warming is the next government. And they're talking about, oh, gee, if it doesn't succeed, won't it be terrible? Also, make no mistake about it, the ISIS attacks in Paris were meant to eliminate the vast crowds of people that would have showed up at this thing if they would have been allowed to. It gives the French government a reason to keep people off the streets from protesting this insanity of a one-world government, so that Obama and Putin and the head of China, etc. This is pure New World Order. But getting back to the idea of the geoengineering movement, where they're going to turn, and they already have, is to say, doggone, we need chemtrail spraying. This is what they're saying. They're saying that they need chemtrail spraying to thwart off this danger of methane. Well, let me explain something to you. In the last million years, we've had probably a dozen ice ages. After every ice age, and that's exactly what's going on now, we came out of an ice age over the last 10,000 years, and that began at the Holocene period when the woolly mammoths died off, etc., the saber-toothed tiger, all those big animals died off. began a severe cooling period, and this was due to the passage of a large comet. The Earth just doesn't jump up and do this by itself. So anyway, after each one of these severe glaciation periods on Earth, we have had a period of advanced, increased methane production, because what happens is methane is coming out of the Earth. It's a byproduct of oil that's trapped in the Earth, and typically it escapes on a regular basis. If there were no permafrost or ice cap or glaciers, it would escape and go into outer space and gone away, bye-bye, never to be seen again. But what happens is when you have glaciation, this is trapped. So as the glaciation melts, as it warms and the planet gets back to normal, and that's what's happening now, you have an increase in methane, and it's short-lived. It happens for a short period of time. You get an increase in methane, and that dies off, and then you get back to normal regarding methane. So that's what we're going through now. So all of this alarmism over methane is for naught. It's not scientifically based on reality. They're not looking at the total picture. But the other issue is, now they're going to use this as a political football to say, hey, they are going to want chemtrail spraying to control the climate. Now, if you understand where geoengineering first came from, it was to stop chemtrail spraying. Now the disinformation crew has got in there. They're manipulating it to get these groups to say, hey, they need chemtrail spraying to save the planet. See how manipulative these people are? It is just unbelievable. So with that in mind, we're going to step into the next topic here. Remember, this is the first of a three-part series on what I call free living. What's free living? Free living means just that. It doesn't cost you anything in terms of currency. Now, you've heard the term free energy, where somebody puts a box on a table and magically energy appears, and you can, you know, you're supposed to be able to run your house or run factories. Well, you know, and people have talked about this. Nobody has produced a working model of such a magical device. And this goes on, and that's to distract people from understanding the real energy issues. We burn up far too much fossil fuel and nuclear fuel, etc. The three main sources for fuel, natural gas, and this is for electricity and transportation, natural gas, nuclear, and coal, and then, of course, petrol in the form of gasoline and diesel for moving automobiles, trains, heavy equipment, etc. But the point is, some people claim to have free energy, that you set this box on a table, it magically extracts energy from the universe, and there's all kinds of explanations, but like I say, this is a modern myth. And typically, a lot of this is sponsored by the government disinformation crews to keep people from looking at real solutions. I always say that if it's a real solution, you will never hear about it. It will be buried, taken out of existence. That's when I released my wing generator. I did it as an open, it's an open architecture so that people can experiment at home, etc. And that's going on right now. There's a lot of people kind of playing around with this idea at home. And then, of course, my own project is the 12-meter wing generator, the Pegasus model, soon to be released for worldwide distribution. And so, anyway, that's a real solution. That's something that can replace nuclear and coal and natural gas for electricity, and then petrol, gas, and diesel for transportation. It's something that is doable, and so it's something that I have to do basically myself, because no venture capitalist in his right mind would take a look at it. By the way, just a little funny story here. We all know Bill Gates, one of the biggest crooks on the planet, in the Bill and Belinda Gates trust fund, or whatever they call it, beneficiary fund, which isn't really that. It's to inject little kids with shots all over the world and experiment on them. But at any rate, I got the Wing Generator Project in front of Bill Gates through some intermediaries, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. Isn't that interesting? Why? Because, hey, a big part of his investment is in energy. So he's publicly stated that he's very much interested in supporting any kind of alternative energy ideas, but, gee, not to the point where it's going to replace what his investments are in. So if Billy is out there listening, or you know anybody out there who knows Billy, hey, kind of poke him in the ribs and say there's this project that really can replace nuclear and coal and petrol. Why don't you put a couple billion into it and let's get this world turned around? But so far I haven't gotten the call from Billy, and I don't think I will. If he does, okay, I'll take the call and we'll talk. But he's not going to own the technology. He's not going to manage it. He's going to contribute to it so that this is for the benefit of everybody, and he's not going to make a dime. That's the whole point. So at any rate, let's go back to free living. So the idea of free living is it doesn't cost you anything. In other words, you use resources. Everybody needs resources. We all use water every day. We need energy every day. We need other types of resources. If we do communications, those communications are done through devices which require energy, etc., etc. So living is not literally free, but there is a way to live to absolutely minimize your costs, and so the fruit of your labors actually can go into you and a better lifestyle, maybe travel, maybe better things for the family, etc. Free living means your house is paid for, your car is paid for, transportation, your food is paid for, your water is paid for, you don't have an energy bill. Free living means life doesn't cost you anything. And now, this is the way I've been living for quite some time, and I can tell you, therefore, it is very possible. Most people are going, well, how do you do that? Well, you get out of the rat race first. You have to, and this is very doable. How did people live, you know, 100 years ago? They didn't walk around with, they didn't have Walmart and Kmart handy. They produced what they needed. They traded, they bartered, and all in all, you know, had a fairly decent lifestyle, but they had something we don't have today, and that's freedom. So when you talk about free living, that's also implying a balanced lifestyle, good food, clean water, milk that you drink right from the cow, etc. And this is something I do, and people think, that's terrible. How can you do that without pasteurizing your milk? Well, you know, the world existed for thousands of years without pasteurization, and they did just fine. The reason you need pasteurization today, the reason you need packaged food, and it says on the label, after you touch this meat, wash your hands thoroughly. The reason you have that is because of concentrated farming. The reason you have herbicides, etc., is because in pesticides on plants is because when you put that much of one type of product in one place, whether it's animals, whether it's plants or corn or soybeans or chickens or whatever it is, you're inviting disease in. And now I've had this experience myself. If you take free-ranging chickens, for example, and let them run around in the woods and eat bugs and things like that, they're stronger. They produce better eggs, and you don't need to give them any kind of antibiotics. You take them and you close them in a closed area. In a week, they've got all the plants killed because just walking around on them will kill all the plants. And within a week, they'll be sickly, and within a month, they'll start dying. Okay, This is a true scenario. You can try it yourself. So, the reason for agriculture the way it is today is because of concentrated growing habits. And so, you find in places where they have a balanced agricultural program, they don't have corn in a big field. They have corn planted with squash and maybe two or three other types of plants, and maybe even planted amongst other kinds of small trees that might bear fruit. The Indians did not have fields of corn. They would plant two or three in one place. They would plant some squash over there. And they didn't plow up the ground. They would actually just dig the ground a little bit, put the seeds in, and that's where they grew. So they didn't have plows. They didn't have sticks or implements where they worked the ground. They grew in a very spread out area. They understood the damaging effects of concentration of various types of growing food. When they and so let's take an example on a hobby farm, say 5 acres or less, or even an acre. An acre is plenty of area to grow all the food you need for a family of, say, 5 or 6 people, to have chickens, to have eggs. And also, there's a myth that eggs are bad for you. Eggs are bad for you if you get them from the store and the chickens are raised in a coop with 1,000 other chickens. Yeah, those eggs are not good for you. You don't want to eat many of those. But they're not telling you the truth. They're saying, oh, it's due to cholesterol. The real reason is because they're full of chemicals, antibiotics, and every other thing under the sun, in pharmaceuticals, you might say, for animals. The feed they feed them, right on the bag, it says not fit for human consumption. If you ate the food that the animals ate, you would probably get sick and die. That's a fact. Go look at the feed store. Do this as an experiment. Go out to your local feed store. If you're in the city, call one up and say, I want to buy some corn and I want to use it for breakfast cereal. And the guy will... He's gonna do that. He's gonna first go, we don't sell that. And you say, well, you sell corn, don't you? He says, yeah, but it's not for human consumption. Well, don't you sell soybeans? Yeah, but not for human consumption. It says right on the bag. And I asked one time. I went out to a farm implement place, and I was gonna buy some, you know, to store up, etc. And the guy, I asked him. I said, well, what would happen to me if I ate this? He said, you'd die. So he was like, here's the guy selling the feed at the store. And it says, he says, see right here, it says right on the bottom in red letters, not for human consumption. But they're feeding this to animals, and then you eat the meat from the animals. Because now you go to the store and you might buy liver, and you think, oh, gee, I'm having an iron-rich meat here that's good, high in iron, and it's really good for you. But you know what? That liver has just filtered out all of those chemicals from that feed, and what you're getting is a royal dose of those chemicals. Let's go back now to a 5-acre plot where you have, say, some sheep or some goats and a cow, chickens. You grow your corn in little lots around the area. You grow your squash or other vegetables in, say, a greenhouse. And you take all of your trailings from the table, not meat or things like that, but just basically take the leftovers from the table and put them into a compost bin. And I'll even tell you something else. If you're using a dry toilet, which I've talked about in the past, if you're using a dry toilet, you can use that for fertilizer. That's because the composting process breaks down and actually kills all the bacteria and things like that. So I just saw an article, I think it was from Ghana. They have a process there. They had a city of 4 million people or something like this, and they had no sewage. The people were just dumping sewage right into the river. So somebody got an idea. It was a private company, certainly not the government, but a private company. And so they came in, and they cleaned this up, and they make it into like these processed pellets. It looks like about the size of a small pop can. Okay, you'll take a pop can, shrink it down about half size. That's about the size of the pellets they were making out of human waste. And then burning that, they were dried out. They were burning that as fuel for heating and also for cooking. And that's in the old days. Now, you may laugh at this, but the Indians used buffalo. They're called buffalo chips, but we know what they are. They're buffalo doo-doo, so to speak. And they would use that for fuel to cook their food. And it's carbon. It's a good, and it doesn't smell when you burn it like that, because all of the methane, the thing that you smell, by the way, is methane when it's fresh. That goes away. That's already left the cow pie, etc., and gone up in the atmosphere. And by the way, the most methane-prone places on the planet are high concentrations of cattle. Argentina, there's some other places in Africa. You can actually see it on the world map of methane concentration, where the concentration of beef cattle are. That's an incredible statement. But at any rate, okay, back to free living. Kind of gotten off the subject here. The topic is balance and freedom. If you have your own source of food, if you have your own, if your housing is paid for, if your transportation is paid for, this guy was telling me a joke. He says, I sat down and I wanted to invent the perfect transportation that it didn't cost any money to maintain. It only consumed eco-friendly products like for fuel. That it was, he even went so far as to say, and it reproduced itself so that it, when this one went bad, it had the next generation. That was the perfect implement or vehicle for the farm and for the going to town, etc. And then he goes, I invented the horse. And so, yeah, you know, the horse is, I've been in places, in fact, recently, where one of the main forms of transportation is still the horse. And the people come in from the countryside to sell their goods. There's no cost in gas. There's no cost in fuel or automobile or maintenance or oil changes or anything else. That horse and a wagon. And they can carry an awful lot on that horse and wagon. And then when they get done selling whatever they have, they get what they need and they go back to their farm. So this is still going on in the world. It's just that many people live in what they call the modern world. And unfortunately, the sentiment is that, gee, that's the way of the future. Seems like everybody wants to come to the United States and live the so-called good life, when in fact, excuse me, the good life is really not there anymore. So a lot of people are leaving and just jumping off and going away and getting some land someplace. And some people think, well, maybe I can make a living selling some products, like selling a crop, doing a cash crop, etc. But here's the problem. Say you want to sell strawberries, whatever, or eggs, whatever it is. Okay. You produce eggs, you go in, and you're going to sell them to probably a wholesale distributor who then sells them to a retail distributor who then sells them to the public. Well, you're going to get about one-eighth of the price of the retail price for your farm-ready products. And if you sell them to big distributors, you're getting even less. So that literally drives the small guy out of the scene. That's why the egg manufacturer has 10,000 chickens. That's the only way he can make a profit, by being in a contract with some big store, and he sells all his chickens, and the big truck comes out and loads up with eggs or chicken or whatever it is, and there's a penny a chicken profit. And if you have 10,000 of them, then over the course of a month or a year, there's enough profit there to actually make it worthwhile. But the small guy who's raising 20 chickens, hey, there's not enough there. There's not enough there to create profit. So you're better off simply raising food for yourself to eat. And then if you want to, say you have eggs, the guy down the road has squash. You trade eggs for squash, he gets eggs, you get squash. very simple. And so you don't need everything. Get to know the people around you. Get to know the people who are raising other types of products and develop an association with those people. This is the way it used to be. Trade seeds. Buy your seeds from the heirloom seed store. You have seeds that you save. And that's one of the processes that used to go on a long time ago also. When people went to church meetings, when they went to socials or whatever, they would bring their seeds with them and trade them. Because here's another little fact of agriculture. If you plant the same seeds in the same place over and over and over again, then what happens is you each type of seed depletes a certain mineral or mineral type from the earth, and eventually you wear that out. So what they do is they have other types of plants that put, say, nitrogen back in the earth or iron or whatever. And so you vary these various types of plants to the point where then you can replant the original, say, corn or soybeans or whatever. But what you want to do is make sure you have organic, not only organic. This is another trap that people get into. They go, well, I'm raising organic. Well, it's probably GMO seeds organic. So don't get caught in that trap. You need non-GMO heirloom seeds. And by the way, you can't go out and buy bushels and bushels of these. You buy them in little packets, but that's enough for the individual user. I also recommend that people use greenhouses, especially with, say, Fukushima and the radiation coming in. So, once again, what is free living? Free living amounts to having your dwelling paid for. Now, say you're a doctor, you're an engineer, you're a nurse, you're living in town, you're living in the city, you're making good money, you got your nice house, you got an apartment, whatever. My recommendation is to spend your weekends out at the country place. It's a refresher. It gets you away. It's a nice, clean environment to be in. Then slowly start to build this place up as a place to go to. Land right now is at very low prices. There's a few states that don't have any foreclosures at all, but there's a lot of states where land is being foreclosed because nobody wants it, nobody buys it, and it's perfectly good land. Almost any land can be made usable. The one thing you're going to need is water. So make sure that you have a water source and good access. Other than that, if you have water, you can take any place, I guarantee you, and turn it into a fertile area for you to raise crops, have animals, etc. And so the bottom line is have a place that you can go to frequently. Go there, build it up to some place that if you really had to, you could turn over and actually start living there. Then there's next week I'm going to talk a lot more details, but this week I'm going to talk primarily about the balance that you need in your life. A lot of people think, well, gee, I don't know anything about the country. And that's the case for most people. Even if you think you're an expert, say you're an expert woodsman, you go out hunting, you go fishing, you do all those things, the first thing you're going to have to learn is that you're not going to be living off the land. You're not going to be fishing and hunting and everything else. Maybe if you live up in the middle of Alaska, you can get by with that. But the rest of the 48 states, actually 49 if you include Hawaii, you're probably not going to be so-called living off the land, where you simply get all of your food products, etc., that grow naturally. Probably not going to happen. So you have to have a garden. You have to have, like I say, a greenhouse. A greenhouse is a very simple thing to put up. Look on YouTube. I just saw a greenhouse the other day. A guy took blocks, concrete blocks or earth type construction blocks, built a rectangle, put dirt in it, and your dirt initially doesn't have to be the best in the world. Just get and then you start building it up. Leaves, loam. Don't put wood in it. Wood causes fungus And it's an attractor for mushrooms and fungus and things like that that are not good. But basically, leaves are good, other types of forage, this table scraps, like I say, any type of vegetable table scraps. Keep the meat products away from the vegetable products when you eat so you can take the vegetable things. And then have little animals. You could have rabbits. You could have chickens. Chickens are great because they're very... you have to feed them regularly, but then again, if you're not there, say you go to work in the city during the week, of course, having animals is a bit of problematic. But what I'm saying is start to learn the processes. Plant, the thing that the greenhouse does also is it keeps the birds and the little animals away from your vegetables. And so the thing is that you want to have your food source available. Start with things that are simple, like spinach greens, radishes, cabbage, lettuce, things that grow quickly and that are healthy. Each one of these products has a time of year. Then have a little corn patch. Always grow squash with corn. Those are, but these are a few basics. But there are millions of tricks today that people are learning as they're going back, and so there's a ton of information on the internet. There's magazines. There's all kinds of there's groups that you can consult with. But there might be some people out there who want to do something a little larger. This is called an eco village. An eco village is a group of people who get together, maybe buy land together, put a number of houses together. But there's some problems that many times develop, personality problems primarily, between people who all have good intentions at first, but then you might have the alpha type people, the type A type person who wants to control everything. Everything has to be done their way or whatever. And the other end of the spectrum is the loafer, the guy that that wants to come out, not do anything, and just sit around and talk about how great everything is. And then when the crops come in, hey, isn't it great? We all got food now. So those are the two types of the at the end of the spectrum. But be that as it may, there are a growing number of very successful eco-villages. And this is, remember, back in the 60s, it was back to the land type of movements. And a lot of those succeeded, but something that's succeeding on a much higher level today is the eco-village movement. Because here's the deal. Here's the difference, the big difference that I see. The eco-village people not only want to live friendly with the earth, they want to live an advanced lifestyle. And this is my part number three. In 2 weeks, I'll be talking about living with high technology, good education, all of the other modern things we deal with, communications, transportation, etc., but also living within your means in an eco-village setting. Now, that's really, really important. But that's week three, so I won't touch too much about that. The Paris Climate Conference right now is... one thing that I have to warn people about, if you're looking for places out in the country, etc., especially in the northern states, and I believe, I don't really know the cause, but the northern woods are dying. And I'm not sure if it's due to chemtrails spraying or if it's due to high ultraviolet light coming off of the sun. This is something I talked about on James Jancic's show last Sunday, but just briefly, first of all, this magnetic reversal, that's complete bunk. It has nothing to do with reality at all. But there is something that is going on, and that is we have increased ultraviolet radiation coming off the sun. And I don't think there's anybody, including myself, that understands exactly why this is happening. But be that as it may, we have not measured the sun over we've had a certain amount of limited data from the sun, but only in the modern age have we really been able to measure the spectrum of the sun. But it may be due to ultraviolet light, or it might be due to aluminum content or other things that they're spraying in chemtrails. And just a slight increase in aluminum is enough to set the balance off in plants. Now, there's various studies on this, but I can guarantee you when you start combining factors and putting unwanted elements into the mix in the biosphere, then basically the plants are very delicate. They're used to a very set regimen of minerals, metals, trace metals, etc., like aluminum. So I don't really know. I know the in many of the northern states, the moose population and the deer population are dying off. The fish yields are much lower than they used to be. Mercury is a problem. There's many states where fishing is a big tourist industry, and they tell people don't eat more than like a pound of fish caught wild in the wild. Don't eat more than like 1 pound per week. And pregnant mothers or nursing mothers shouldn't have any at all. This is absolutely incredibly horrible, but it's primarily due to the paper industry that's polluted. That's one of the main sources of mercury. There's also lead poisoning and other. So these are going into the aluminum, mercury, lead. Those are all some of the heavy metal poisons that affect biopopulations. But, and that's why I tell people to develop a greenhouse where you have your own compost, you build up the soil, and possibly even have that soil tested. Have it tested for aluminum if you are able to. If you have an agricultural university nearby, many times they do soil testing, tell you what's lacking in the soil. But putting up a greenhouse, like I said, you just put either wood or a row of block around and then get some plastic tubing or metal tubing and then cover it with plastic. The plastic today will last for 5 or 6 years, sometimes longer, UV-protected plastic. But if you're growing in a controlled environment like a greenhouse, then the humidity is from in the greenhouse, etc., and you're going to eliminate a lot of the problems dealing with chemtrail spraying and chemical pollution. So count on that. And here's some advice also. If you're just starting small, you're just starting out, start small. Just get the hang of it and then expand. Double, triple, quadruple your original space. I saw a guy, he ran a farm out in, this was a YouTube video, western Minnesota, built a great big greenhouse. Had it done in 2 days, cost under $100. This thing was about 100 feet long. And, I mean, he claimed they had used material, etc. Very inexpensive, and they were going to start their crops for the field in that to give them another number of weeks advantage. Along with heat, etc., a greenhouse can give you three-season growing period, and so you can start having, say, spinach in March and some of those leafy agricultural products that grow in a short period of time. But the biggest thing with any of this is the social aspect of free living, understanding what it is, the whole concept of balance, the whole concept of living with nature. And like I say, don't plan to live off the land. Plan to domesticate the land. If you're in an area where there's, say, wild birds, whether they're quail or pheasants or something like that, you can also somewhat domesticate them simply by feeding them. And they'll come in, and when you're not there, they'll go off and forage and find food. But that's another way. That's the way original agriculture began, on a small basis, as they started to understand that how to save and plant seeds or how to domesticate animals. But the biggest thing that we're missing out of society today is simply having the family sit down and talk, keeping the television turned off. Please don't put in electricity and a satellite dish and a TV in your remote place. Part of this is social development, and that's something that's been completely lost from modern society. If you get away to a place, in fact, I would almost suggest a lot of people are preoccupied with electricity. Eventually, if the things really come down, none of us are going to have electricity. So if you're buying tools, if you're buying implements to work a garden or anything like that, get hand tools. Try and do everything as much as by hand as possible, and you'll be amazed. For example, cutting a tree with an axe or a chainsaw, it's actually many times easier and less work to cut with a handsaw or an axe than it is to cut with a chainsaw. You have to get the chainsaw, get it all set up, get it greased, get the proper amount of oil in it, the right mixture of gasoline. You got to, it's big and heavy. You got to carry it around. By the time you get all that done, the tree would be cut down and you'd be sawing off the limbs by hand. Unless this is, you're starting to get into big trees. But at any rate, think about hand tools. Think about using hand tools for most of your activities. And in the long run, they're a lot less expensive. Make sure you get them with good handles. So wooden handles are kind of a thing of the past. Get fiberglass handles. But anyway, but like I say, the biggest thing here is social development. Get to know the neighbors, the people that are doing things. And what you're going to find is in a lot of those areas, the people are very active. They're very tuned to living in that environment. And it's something that, you know, it just rubs off. Once you get around people like that, you notice they're a lot happier than people in the city, on and on. So that's part one of free living, living with balance, living freedom. And you'll find that really freedom is something, it's a mindset. It's the ability to know that you can live without somebody else's help. That's, when you get to that point, that is true freedom. Just a couple minutes left in this show. Remember, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. And the book products, the water filter products, there's still some great sales on the water filters, the big ones, the stainless steel and the plastic, food-grade plastic water filters. And then the 10 packs of what I call GF filters that take out everything in the filter element itself. Those are on a tremendous sale, including free shipping. So go there and find out all about that. It's on the webpage. Look at the Windroids OS, Windroids 11 OS operating system. Carrot bars, Via Viente, also explained there. Once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. And, of course, dig through the page for commentary, for pictures of the day. I've got a great write-up on the Russian space program in the center column in the main homepage talking about the history of the Russian space program. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And, as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.